Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to One Guy with a Mic. Dingers and dunks, baby. Welcome to Football Friday, you know, because that's what we're doing during football season. We're going to talk about some football matchups at the end of this thing and also give our predictions for the week as well. So before I start, before we get into Football Friday, let's talk a little about baseball, all right, because it is playoff season. And there is nothing like some good playoffs for Major League Baseball. So we saw this week the Phillies beat the Marlins in two games. The Twins took out the Blue Jays in two games. The D-backs took out the Brewers in two games. The Rangers took out the Rays. So now we're on to the NLDS, right? Well, what do we got for matchups in the NLDS? Well, we got some division rivalries going on here. We've got Braves and Phillies. We got the Dodgers and Diamondbacks. I don't know if that's a rivalry or not, but it could start. That's all in the NL. On the AL side, we got Houston and Minnesota. Carlos Correa going against his former team. And then you also got the Texas Rangers going against the Baltimore Orioles. So, did a Major League Baseball preview at the start of the year, and well, the Cubs were in it for a wild card spot, and then they lost it, a la 2004. If any Cubs fans out there remember that, that's when we had a division lead, and lost it all in the last week. Kind of this situation as well. My two picks to make the World Series did not make the playoffs, which were the Padres and Mariners. So I guess we're going to go back to the drawing board next year on that. Definitely did not hit as many playoff teams as I did last year, because last year I got the entire AL right. Because I had the Angels in there. So, minus that. And I only had half the World Series right, because I had the Phillies in the World Series last year, which they didn't make. The Yankees did not, so because they lost out to the Astros. And I didn't have the World Series winner correct, because I picked the Phillies to win the World Series. So, it was a really good guesstimate. Let's put it that way. So let's go with this year's guesstimate, shall we? We're going to go with I think the Twins can outlast the Astros. I really think that the Astros just finally are going to lose something. I really do. Okay. I definitely think that series goes max games. Then you got the Rangers and Orioles. Definitely taking the Orioles on this one. Hot team. Definitely the surprise of the year. And then we got on the NL, I'm going to go Dodgers over D-backs. And then we're going to go Braves over Phillies. There's a lot of Braves fans that are afraid of this Phillies team. Really wish that they would have not been lined up against the Braves to play in this round, because it's such a dangerous squad. But I think the Braves really don't have a third starter, so I don't know what they're going to do with that. Hopefully, if Max Fried can come back, then they have their third. They got Charlie Morton out as well. Hopefully, Morton can come back as well. So, if they can get those two guys back, I really think they have a really good chance of beating the squad. So, I'm going Phillies, and I'm going Dodgers on the other end. So, I'm going Braves, Dodgers. All right. So, then we'll take the Braves over the Dodgers. I think we're going to have a little Baltimore and Atlanta party in the World Series, but I'd really like to see, since it's been 32 years since we saw a Braves Twins World Series, I'd really like to see that. So maybe the Twins can pull it off. I don't know. I haven't really watched much Twins baseball this year, so there's that. So there's the picks that I got going on the rest of the week time going for the playoffs. Now, let's get into a little uh, Also, one other note that was a huge thing as well. So this is the first time since 1983 that the Yankees, Red Sox, or Cardinals were not in the playoffs, right? So I've been alive since July of 1982. So this is like my 42nd playoff season, right? And just to put that into perspective, so 83, 85, 89, and then 91, 92, 93 are only the 6 playoff seasons in 42 playoff seasons that I've been alive for that have never, that the Yankees, Cardinals, nor Red Sox have been a part of. That is crazy for those three teams to dominate basically 42 years of baseball. And you also got to remember that back in the 80s, they only took 4 teams to the playoffs. Like, it didn't get expanded until 95 is when they expanded to a wild card in 3 divisions. Before that, it was 2 divisions, and it was 2, yeah, because you had the East and the West. That was it, and the AL and the NL. So basically 4 teams made the playoffs, and that was it. So we've definitely come a long ways from that. So on today's show, before we get into Football Friday, I'm going to talk about the 1998 MLB season. It was a season that saved baseball. And because of the strike in 94, because of the strikes in the 80s, really wasn't a fan-friendly game, okay? So let's talk about the attendance numbers that are going on here. So between 1990 and 1997, the highest attendance was for combined was 70 million people, all right? And that was in 1993. In 94, with the strike happening, obviously, it dropped to 50 million. But then out of the strike, 95 was barely over, was just short of 50.5 million in attendance. And then in 96, it got to 60 million. So in 96, 97, saw increases from 60 million to 62.9 million people, all right? But then in 98, you had 70.6 million people show up, which was the most for that decade. Even 99, there was only 70.1 million people that showed up. So you saw a lot of increases in attendance throughout that 98 season, which is carried on currently as well, right? So that 98 season, we saw Kerry Wood make his debut, saw Alex Gonzalez make his debut of Alex Gonzalez of the 2003 Cubs that made the air that then caused the whole Bartman scene. Andre Beltre made his debut then. A couple of coaches made their player debut there, AJ Hinch and Alex Cora as well. And then we also obviously saw the home run chase and whatnot with McGuire and Sosa as well. So let's give you a few stats from that. I mean, I at that time in 1998, I was 16 years old. My 15 to 16 year old season is what that was. And I was out of baseball at that time. I was just on the sidelines watching it, right? Because I started playing softball at that time. Church League softball to be a fact. And I almost got tossed out of 2 Church League softball games for arguing with the umpire. Imagine that. I also did almost get into, then also a 31-year-old man wanted to beat me up through the handshake line because I turned to triple play on this as well. I was playing left field, co-ed Church League softball. I'm playing left. So guy hits it. There's 2 runners on. Guy hits it. So I'm running back. Try the old Willie Mays catch over the shoulder. Missed it the first time, right? So then next thing is up. There's, again, runners on first and second. Guy hits it over my head. I turn around. Going to catch it over my shoulder. All I hear is their third baseman, who's in the dugout, saying, "He's going over his shoulder again. Everybody run." Well, okay. So I make the catch. Turn around, throw a strike to second base, get the guy out at second, and then we get the guy out at first as well. Turned out a triple play. I then walked it off, ran into the dugouts, giving him the old DX salute, if you know, if all you wrestling fans know what I mean, in a church league game. So I have that pride on my wisdom as well. So the 98 season, we saw what happened in the 98 season. Well, the New York Yankees swept the San Diego Padres in the World Series after they had won 114 regular season games. So the Yankees won 125 regular season games between the world, between the regular season and the playoffs, which is a record still. All right. We also saw the expansion of two teams with the added addition of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who's in the who's actually won as many World Series in the last, in their existence in the last 25 years as the Cubs have in my entire lifetime. So there's that. I also saw the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, who are now the Tampa Bay Rays, because apparently they had to drop the Devil Rays. I don't understand why they dropped that, but I thought the Devil Rays was a cool logo, man. You also had the Milwaukee Brewers moved to the moved from the NL AL Central to the NL Central. So the Tigers went from the AL East to the AL Central as well. The Diamondbacks were added to the West, obviously. And then down the road, you had the Astros move from the National League to the American League. So that way each team, each side had 15 teams. And again, the biggest story was the home run chase that year. So Bud Selig is our commissioner at the time. Okay. He was the de facto commissioner for 6 years before they officially made him the official commissioner of Major League Baseball. Cause up to that point, he was just interim and still managing the Brewers every single day. Once he became the official commissioner, then he had to put it into a trust, which then allowed his daughter to run the team, in quotations, because I'm sure he was still running the team then as well. So, how did that season fare? Well, you had the Yankees go 114-48. You had the Red Sox go 92-70, right? Tampa Bay Devil Rays in their inaugural year went 63-99. How have they have changed over the years? That was the AL East. And the AL Central, the Cleveland Indians at the time, now the Cleveland Guardians, they won the Central with an 89-73 record, as the White Sox finished second at 80-82. Imagine that. The White Sox are mediocre in 98 and still mediocre now, but they just can't hit 500. I mean, they didn't even hit 500 then, but now they're like 15 games below 500. Then you had the Rangers win the West, at going 88-74 after a battle with the Angels at 85-77. All right. Then over in the NL, you had the Braves went, won 106 games and went 56, with 56 losses. They beat out the Mets and the Phillies that year. In the Central, you had the Astros beat win the Central with 102 wins and 60 losses. And then the Cubs got the wild card that year, finishing 70-73. Why did they play 163 games? Well, that's because the Cubs and Giants tied that year, so they had to go to a playoff. And then you had the NL West Padres winning the West. All right, with the Giants finishing 89-74. So our matchups in the ALDS were the Yankees and Rangers. The Cleveland and Boston is how that worked out. In the NLDS, we had the Braves and Cubs, and Houston and San Diego. All right, well, the Yankees swept the Rangers. The Cleveland took 3 out of 4 from Boston. And then the Braves swept the Cubs after their play-in game. And then we also had Houston lose 3-1 to San Diego. Next up, you had in the league championship series, you had the Yankees 4-2 over Cleveland, and San Diego beat Atlanta 4-2. And then the Yankees would go on to sweep the Padres, as I said, 4-0. Now, that year, we also had Baseball Hall of Fame. We had George Davis get inducted, Larry Doby, Lee McPhail, Bullet Rogan, and Don Sutton all got voted in that year. The Rookie of the Year winners were Kerry Wood, Ben Grieve. Cy Young Award winners was Tom Glavine and Roger Clemens for Toronto. Manager of the Years were Larry Durker and Joe Torre. MVPs were Sammy Sosa and Juan Gonzalez. Then you had your Gold Gloves of Greg Maddux winning his, 1 of 12. You had Mike Mussina over in the AL. Charles Johnson was the catcher. Ivan Pudge Rodriguez won it in the AL. First base, you had JT Snow and Rafael Palmeiro. Second base saw Brett Boone and Roberto Alomar. Third base was Scott Rolen, who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, and Robin Ventura. Shortstop was Ray Ordonez and Omar Vizquel. Outfielders that won Gold Gloves were Barry Bonds, Larry Walker, and Andrew Jones, who, two of those three are not in the Hall and should be. Bonds and Jones both should be in the Hall of Fame. In the AL, you had Bernie Williams, Jim Edmonds, and Griffey Jr. as well. So, there we go. Tom Glavine won the Silver Slugger Award for the pitcher slash designated hitter in the AL in the NL. Meanwhile, Jose Canseco won it over in the AL as well. So, outstanding designated hitter award went to Edgar Martinez, and Sammy Sosa won the Roberto Clemente Award that year for humanitarian relief. Also, the Rural Aid's Relief Man Award, which I think they should still have this. I don't think they do, though. Went to Tom Gordon and Trevor Hoffman. So, that's how that went. Let's see. So, picture this. 1998. No one's really showing up to games. All of a sudden, you get into a home run derby situation all year long. I don't care if you want to say these boys are jacked up on roids, whatnot. These boys saved baseball, all right? Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa saved baseball. Also, you got to remember, Ken Griffey Jr. was actually in this chase as well for a while. And he ended up getting hurt, I do believe, is how that went. Let's see if I can... Yeah, so in 1998, Ken Griffey Jr. was... the AL guy that was having the awesome year. I think he ended up with like 56 home runs. It's kind of like the 61 series when you had Maris and Mantle going after it as well, where Mantle ended up getting hurt even though he was also there. So, oh, actually, I take that back. No, he was not hurt. He did play 161. Griffey did play 161 games that year. And he had 56 home runs, 146 RBIs, and 20 stolen bases. He did bat .284 with a .365 on-base percentage and .611 slugging percentage, which wasn't even the highest slugging percentage of his career. That was .674 back in 1994. So realistically, you had... Ken Griffey hitting bombs. You had Barry Bonds hitting bombs that year. I mean, there was a lot of home runs being hit. Like, chicks dig the long ball. I think that was even when the commercial came out for that was that year as well with Maddox and Tom Glavine. Oh, no, I take that back. Hold on 1 second. I'm pretty sure it was. That was a Nike commercial. And when Nike had their campaigns. Because, again, we used to have fun commercials with our baseball players. I guess that was in 99. It was when that took place after the home run. After the home run champ. So, but, yeah, I was, like I said, I was... 15, 16 years old, following it, obviously, because the Cubs were having a good year. And to me, that was probably the funnest year being a Cubs fan as well in my lifetime that I can remember for the simple fact that the Cubs were in a battle all year. You had Kerry Wood's 20-game strikeout as well. And then you also had the playoff game. Unfortunately, before the 1998 season, Harry Carey passed away on February 14th, so he was not able to see it. So let's just see how significant that 98 season was, all right? So you had McGwire and Sosa both hit over 61 home runs. McGwire finished with 70, Sosa with 66. It is There were several players that had come close in the years before 98. You had Matt Williams and Ken Griffey Jr. were both on pace to break Maris's record in 94 before the strike happened. Then you had in 95, Albert Bell became the first player since Cecil Fielder hit 50 home runs in a season. And then Bell was the fourth player in previous three decades to reach 50 home run milestone, besides Foster and Mays. And then in 96, we saw Brady Anderson hit 50 home runs, which was twice the number he ever hit in his entire career. So, and then you had 97, which featured McGuire and Griffey. As well, McGuire finished with 58 home runs, and then Griffey finished with 56. So, we had in May, you had, or I should say in June, Sosa would catch up. He had 13 home runs entering the month of June, and then Sosa decided to go off. He had his first of four multi-home run games in that month on June 1st. And then he would go on to break Rudy York's record with 20 home runs in the month of June, a record that still stands. By the end of the historic month, the outfielder's total was 33, and he was only four behind McGuire. So basically in June, Sosa heated up, and that's when the race really started. They were remained competitive throughout July, and then in August, it saw McGuire go on an 8-game home run drought, and then which had led his lead down dwindle down to 2, just 2 above Sosa, and Griffey was right behind there with 41. And then hitting all 3 home runs over the next 10 days, his pace at the end of August would be 61.9 for McGuire. Sosa, meanwhile, had followed up his 20 home runs in June with a combined 22 for July and August. And then at the end of the month, however, the two sluggers were locked in at 55 home runs, putting them on pace for about 65. For the first time in 37 years, leaving the single-season home record in imminent jeopardy. They're also one short of Hack Williams' National League record. At this point, though, Griffey is already 47 home runs, well behind the pace needed to break Maris's record. So, like I said, Griffey would go ahead and finish 56, which then that would be the most home runs hit by a AL player until Aaron Judge decided to hit 62 last year and break Maris's AL record. McGuire would begin September with 4 home runs in the first 2 games against the Marlins, and then his September 5th home run set the stage for one of baseball's classic moments. As he sat on 60 home runs entering a 2-game set against the Cubs, McGuire hit a home run against Mike Morgan that went 430 feet, which was the 61st home run of the season. And then on the next day, on a nationally televised game, he decided to take Steve Traxel deep on a 341-foot home run. It was the shortest home run of the season, not only for McGuire, but also for all of baseball. He'd break the record on that, and then that ball didn't even make it to the stands, and was caught by a member of the grounds crew. Then they would go ahead and pause the game. Mark Grace was playing first base. They shared a half hug and high five around it. Like I said, they did pause the game for this for celebration. And then after that, McGuire would go 6 consecutive games without a home run, allowing Sosa to hit his 62th home run. After hitting 4 games and only 3 games against the Brewers, and then the two battled back for the rest of the year for the all-time lead. The last time they were tied was on September 25th. Sosa hit a 62-foot home run off of Jose Lima for his 66th, and that would be the last of his year of the year. McGuire would hit 5 home runs against 5 different pitchers during a Cardinals hostian against the Expos, who are now the Washington Nationals, and then set the 70 mark with a 370-foot home run off Carl Pavano. So, that is how that finished. The Cardinals went 83-79 that year. Meanwhile, like I said, the Cubs finished 90-73. Sosa also hit 308 that year with 66 home runs, and he had 158 RBIs. Meanwhile, McGuire did hit 299 with 70 home runs and 147 RBIs as well. And then that record would stand until, obviously, Barry Bonds broke it in 2001. And then also you have the steroid controversy and everything else, and which I don't believe. Yeah, here's the deal with steroids, as I've said many times on this show before, is that they let you recover faster, they let you build muscle, but you still got to be able to hit a curveball. Still got to be able to hold a 97 mile an hour fastball on the corner as well. Guys, I want to say the easiest pitch to hit is a 97 mile an hour fastball down the middle. Or the hardest pitch, I should say, is a 97 mile an hour fastball down the middle. I'm sorry. I'm guessing the corner pitches are probably harder. So, obviously, you have the Mitchell Report and everything else. But from 1998, baseball has grown in attendance. So, from 2000 to 2010, you saw an increase in attendance amongst all of them. You also saw expansion as well going forward. You had the biggest, largest crowd ever with 115,000 people at an MLB game in 2008 as well. So yeah, I mean, it's just slowly gone up. So baseball has basically bounced back. They are now a $9 to $12 billion industry, and we still want to complain about player salaries, even though the billionaires are making way more than the millionaires that are playing the game. So now there we have it. There is your fun times for the 98 MLB season. Lots of home runs, lots of fun, and it brought baseball back to what it was, which is always a good thing. The reason why I talk about baseball the most, as I've said, it's probably one of the games that I love the most from the intricacies of it. I probably pronounced that word totally wrong, so y'all can shoot me later. But baseball is just, it's the national pastime. And I get it that that's not how we see it now. We don't see it as the national pastime because we have football, because, you know, baseball or basketball is more exciting. People want to complain about the pitch clock, all the changes that we did, that Major League Baseball did this year. But at the same time, by making those changes, by doing those changes, it sped the game up. There's only 9 games that lasted longer than 3 hours this year. The average time of a game this year was 2 hours and 36 minutes. Like, that's important when you're trying to grow your game and make sure you have people that are going to be there to watch it. Like, people don't want to go to a baseball game and sit there for 3.5 hours. And I get that some of us do. I mean, I don't have a problem going through and sitting there for 3.5 hours for a baseball game, because I'm there for the game. I'm there for the atmosphere. I'm there for the excitement. There's so much mental gamesmanship going through between the pitcher and the batter, between the two coaches, that you're just not going out there and, like, designing schemes like you do in football, or designing plays like in basketball to get things done. Like, you have to look at analytics plays a part of it, but you can't live by the analytics either. You also have to realize that, hey, we're playing a game, and we need to make sure that if our pitcher's pitching, like, great, like Jose Barreras was against the Twins, and they pulled him after 3 innings, keep him in the game. Let him pitch. I know the days of Randy Johnson coming in to close to save a game after pitching the day before, or Jack Morris going all 10 innings against the Braves, or Tom Glavine going all 10 games. You know, I understand those pitchers aren't here every single day, and we do say, oh, starters are going to go 6 or 7, or we put a limit on it. But reality, it's playoff baseball. Let's get it done. All right. So what do we got going on for the NFL this week? Well, our Thursday night matchup was the Commanders and Bears. I'm guessing the Commanders won. Just saying. Then on Sunday morning at 8:30 in the a.m., we have the Bills-Jaguars. Sorry, there is no Toy Story game this week. They are not doing that apparently this weekend. However, that was a lot of fun. Then you have the Texans-Falcons. Oh, by the way, I'm going Bills over Jaguars. Then you got the Texans-Falcons. Man, has D'Amico Ryans really turned that Texans team around or what? So I'm taking Texans over the Falcons because Desmond Ridder just looks horrible. Then you got the Lions-Panthers. Panthers are going to stay move to 0-5 as the Lions are just the strongest team in the NFC North right now. Then you got the Titans-Colts. This is a 50-50 matchup in my eyes. It all depends on which Derrick Henry we get. Last week, I benched Derrick Henry on my fantasy team and lost by 2 points. Thanks, Raheem Mostert. So I'm taking the Titans over the Colts this week. You got the Dolphins-Giants. Dolphins who put up 70 points 1 week, turn around, put up 20 points the next week. Yeah, you guys have a real identity crisis there. So I'm taking Dolphins over Giants. Giants are not turning out to be the team I thought they were going to be. I thought Daniel Jones would be stepping up and making his plays, but apparently he's not. The Saints-Patriots. So I got to go. The Patriots is my cousin Travis's favorite team. The Saints is Brianne's favorite team, the Mrs.'s favorite team. And I'm going Patriots on this because the Saints have Derek Carr as quarterback. And as a Raider fan, I know how crappy of a quarterback he is. Next up, you got the Ravens and Steelers. Obviously, the Ravens, that defense is going to eat. Can he pick it up if he plays? If he doesn't play, then that defense is eating up Mitch Trubisky. Then you got the Eagles and Rams taking the Eagles. Cooper Kupp might play in this game, but I don't think that's going to make a difference because the Eagles are still just on a different level in the NFC. Next up, you got a battle of 1-3 teams. You got the Bengals and the Cardinals. I'm going Cardinals on this one for the simple fact that Joe Burrow is playing with a hurt calf and does not look like Joe Burrow from last year. And even then, I am benching him on my fantasy team as well. Can't play Jimmy G, though, because he's hurt, so now I'm left with Josh Dobbs. All right, next up, you got to cut another couple 1-3 teams. You got the Broncos and Jets, and I'm taking the Broncos at home on this against the Jets. I really think that Sean Payton has made an example. They just cut Randy Gregory loose, and even though he signed a 4-year, like, I don't know, $60 million deal or some crap like that, he was getting paid a lot to do a little. So he's just proved a point that, hey, guess what? Y'all better step up because I ain't afraid to get cut you just because you make a lot of money. Then you got another 3 o'clock game is going to be the Chiefs-Vikings. That looked pretty good on paper for a while, and now the Vikings have showed their true colors. So obviously Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are going to win that. And then you have the great matchup of Sunday Night Football, Cowboys-Niners. First time they've been in a primetime matchup since like 1990. Which during the regular season, which is kind of crazy to me because I remember in the 90s how it was just Cowboys, Niners all the time. I'm taking the home team here, the Niners. Cowboys offense just doesn't look good. Two great defenses, though, so it's probably going to be a low-scoring game. And then as a Raiders fan, this is the crapshoot of the Monday night game. If they couldn't pick out a worse Monday night game than this one right here. But it's the Green Bay Packers versus the Raiders in Vegas. I'm going with the Raiders on it, not because, you know, I think the Raiders can win or that they're my favorite team. Just don't think the Packers are that great. So, and I also think that's going to be a low-scoring game as well. So there's the highlights of that. Over in college football, we have some of the top 25 games for college football this weekend. Is you got Georgia versus, I think they're playing Mississippi State. Let me pull it up here. Let's see. Schedule. Let's see. So we got Georgia versus Kentucky. Sorry, not Mississippi State. Georgia versus Kentucky at 6 o'clock on ESPN. That's Central Time. You got Bama versus A&M. That's going to be a good matchup. As my guy, Mr. Jason Pick Boss Man always says, in the SEC, go with the home team. So I'm taking A&M on that one. In the Red River Rivalry, which is at 11 o'clock, you got Oklahoma versus Texas. Every blowout since, I don't know, forever, I guess, is Texas has only blown out Oklahoma one time, and that was 49-0. So I'm going Oklahoma in this one. And that means, Spencer, you'll be seeing the Dupree jersey on Saturday. You got also in the SEC, you got LSU versus an undefeated Missouri team. I'm going LSU on that one. In the Big Ten, you got a battle of undefeateds, Maryland and Ohio State. Yeah, Ohio State by a lot. Out in the Pac West, out in the Pac, you got Washington State versus UCLA as the game of the week. I'm definitely going to go Washington State until you prove me otherwise. Let's see. You got Notre Dame versus Louisville. That's a good matchup. Take Notre Dame on that one. Louisville's undefeated at 5-0, though. So, yeah, I mean, it's not really, it's some good games out there, but let's see what's outside the top 25 for games, shall we? We got a 4-1 Rutgers team versus Wisconsin. Let's see, we got Florida State going to go beat the crap out of Vatek. That'll be fun. Here's a Big Ten game that you probably want to be interested in watching. Iowa and Purdue, a 4-1 Iowa team versus a 2-3 Purdue team. And Iowa's only favored by 2 points. And that's also given the home team discount of 5 as well. So there's that. I have no favorite team while playing this week as UNLV has the week off. So if you want a little MAC action, or not MAC action, you want a little Mountain West action, Colorado State, Utah State, and San Jose State, Boise State. Boise State's definitely going to trounce them if you want a little Mountain West action. Or, yeah, ooh, actually, here's the better game, Fresno State, Wyoming. It's on 7 o'clock, and they'll be on Fox. That is the way better Mountain West game than the two I just told you. So, hey, as always, I'm going to wrap this up. It's been 37 minutes. I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing my voice. No, you guys love me. So, as always, thanks for listening. Make sure to hit that like button, hit that follow button, hit the bell so that way you get notified of when we drop these. We're trying to get back into it and dropping it every week. So, with that said, thanks for listening. Check me out. If you're a first timer here, hope you come back. If you're a long timer here, thanks for being a grand listener, and y'all have a great day.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.